All right, right now I am joined with Gwen Schulman, who just wrote her, actually her first article for the Media Co-op, but before that she's been hosting a show on CKUT based out of Montreal called Amandala, which looks at African issues. So thank you very much for coming on the show, Gwen.
No, my pleasure.
So basically the article that you co-wrote for the Media Co-op was kind of concerning this alliance between NGOs, the three leading NGOs and the three leading Canadian mining companies.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the first thing is break down what exactly this partnership means and what does it entail exactly?
Okay, well, I mean, just technically what it is that CETA announced back in September, the Canadian International Development Agency, announced that it was making $26.7 million available to joint projects that would be led by Canadian NGOs in collaboration with Canadian mining companies. So specifically, we're talking about Plan Canada teaming up with IAMGOLD in Burkina Faso to the tune of $7.6 million over 5.5 years. The second NGO is World Vision, along with the real biggie, Barrick Gold. This is in Peru, and that's $1 million over 3.5 years. And then the third partnership is WUSC with Rio Tinto Alcan, for a total budget of $928,000. And if memory serves me correctly, that's in Ghana. And that's a project over 3 years. So in all of these instances, CETA is kicking in money, and then the NGO and the mining company that have been brought together for these projects are kicking in a counterpart amount of money.
Right. Now, why are they doing this exactly?
Yeah, so that is the million-dollar question, or I guess the $26.7 million question.
I guess it was raised about the lack of government funding now for NGOs. I guess that's...
Well, I think certainly I see two things going on here. There is no question that there is a shrinking pool of development aid money available. So there are all these NGOs that are competing for less and less money. Certainly under the Harper government, that's become particularly flagrant. So certainly that is an issue, and it puts the NGO community really under the gun. And I think while many NGOs are scandalized by this concept and refuse to have anything to do with it, there are clearly some that have been prepared to jump into bed with the mining industry as a way of obtaining ever scarcer funds. So I think that's one side of the story. Fairly straightforward. I think the other side of the story is that the mining industry has been incredibly successful in thwarting any attempts to regulate it, and I see this whole alliance as part of that whole process and demonstrates the degree to which the Harper government really is there to facilitate the mining industry. Now, let's just back up a little bit. Some time back, there was a roundtable put together on the Canadian extractive industry working overseas in developing countries. And this was an initiative. This ended up bringing on board NGOs, academics, some players within the extractive industry, rights activists came together, looked at the situation of the activities of Canadian mining companies overseas, and clearly came to the conclusion that something needed to be done to rein in the most egregious abuses being committed by some of these companies, and that it was not enough to have voluntary codes of conduct, it wasn't enough to have corporate social responsibility programs and all of this, that in fact these companies had to be monitored in a meaningful way, and they needed to be held legally accountable for human rights and environmental abuses. So those are the conclusions that came from this pan-Canadian work done by all of these groups. A report was submitted to the government of the day, and it was essentially watered down to the point where it basically didn't, all the teeth were taken out of it, and then it was ultimately shelved and never saw the light of day. Now, during that process, that roundtable process that mobilized Canadians across the country and really looked deep and came to this conclusion that regulation was what was required, a number of mining companies set up a parallel process and managed to encourage some NGOs to be involved in this process. And they came up with an alternative arrangement, which is that mining companies should partner with NGOs to work on corporate social responsibility projects in the various communities where they were working. And that is the initiative that saw the light of day. And so what Canadian mining corporations managed to do, and certainly hugely facilitated by the Harper government through this money from CETA, was to say, we don't need any kind of regulation. What we'll do is we'll pair with NGOs who are clearly legitimate players on the global scale, and we'll have them come in and do great projects, train people and deal with water and all of this kind of things. And then you see we're not so bad after all. We're obviously open to progressive change, and so there really is no need to bring about any kind of meaningful regulation. And that's where we are today. And the big joke, as far as I'm concerned, is on the Canadian taxpayer, because somehow we've ended up in a strange situation where we are subsidizing Canadian mining companies in whitewashing their activities in the various communities. It's just, it's amazing to me.
How do you mean that Canadian taxpayers are subsidizing it? You mean like it's just
normally,
huge government subsidies are basically going to them?
Well, the CETA money is Canadian taxpayer money. I mean, it's you and me and everybody else who works in this country that funds Canadian international development overseas. And so it is that money that is now being used to finance these corporate social responsibility projects in Africa and in Latin America. And, you know, traditionally that has been the rule of the corporation. They move into these communities, they set up their projects, and as part of their efforts to try to protect their reputations, they have invested certain amounts of money, usually just woefully inadequate and ridiculous, but in an effort to maintain a good kind of PR image, they have financed these projects. And now, lo and behold, in 2012, it's us who's financing them.
Wow. Now, you talked about, you know, there's these two processes, and the corporate responsibility, corporate self-regulation was the one that came out. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, a partnership with the NGOs. But how was partnership defined, though, in this case? I'm unclear on exactly, you know, what do they mean by we're having a partnership with the NGOs? I mean,
okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay, so specifically what's going on is the Canadian government through CETA has made this, as I said, taxpayers' money available to NGOs that will be working with Canadian mining companies overseas. So these are presumably short-term partnerships in the sense that money has been released to an NGO like Plan Canada to work with, in this instance, IAMGOLD, to do labor training in Burkina Faso. So for the duration of that funding, IAMGOLD and Plan Canada are partners working on a project that they've agreed to fund in collaboration with the Canadian government.
Okay. Now, you brought up Burkina Faso. Now, in talking about the actual environmental, labor, and sort of social mm-hmm. effects and policies of these mining companies, I mean, wasn't there recently some labor disputes and things in Burkina Faso implementing these the mining companies?
Okay, so to be clear, that this labor dissent had nothing to predates the arrangement that Plan Canada and IAMGOLD have going now. So this initiative through CETA that we're talking about came after the labor unrest that was reported at one of IAMGOLD's sites in Burkina Faso. The point that Roberto and I were trying to make in the article is that IAMGOLD came down very hard on the strikers, in the sense that the CEO was quoted as saying the bottom line is he is not going to tolerate, quote-unquote, an illegal strike. Very threatening statement. And what we were trying to point out was that now Plan Canada has partnered with a corporation that that is on record as making it really clear that it will brook no dissent in at its mines. And our question ultimately to Plan Canada and to the other NGOs involved in this is, do they not see what to us is just such a flagrant conflict of interest for the NGO? How can you be advocating supposedly on behalf of communities when you have tied yourself financially to the very companies that are perpetrating some of the abuses or creating some of the situations that are making things so incredibly difficult for these communities, communities that are having to deal with environmental abuse, often human rights abuse? And so that's really our question, is what does that mean for the kind of advocacy role of NGOs? Now, a lot of NGOs do not assume an advocacy role, but still we feel that it can potentially conflict with the NGO's mandate of poverty alleviation and promoting the rights of these communities.
Yeah. So these are with, as I understand it, it's the three top NGOs?
Well, they're three leading. I wouldn't say they are the top, but they're all biggies. I mean, Plan Canada, biggies, WUSC, yeah, and World Vision are huge, huge NGOs, absolutely. And as I said, I mean, I really have to point out, a lot of NGOs have decided they are not going to touch this money with a 10-foot pole. There is no way. So it's not like the entire NGO community in Canada is behind this initiative. Quite to the contrary, from what I understand, it's been the source of an enormous amount of debate and discussion and disagreement.
Well, that's good then.
Yes, one must take some hope from that, that's for sure. But it is disturbing that three of the most well-known and well-established NGOs quite apparently see absolutely no problem with this. And I feel very strongly that if that's their position, Canadians who help to fund these NGOs, not only, now through taxpayers' money, but always through taxpayers' money, but also through private donation, need to be made aware of the kind of decisions that NGOs are making, and they need to really think about, is this what they had in mind when they were opening up their wallets and generously contributing to organizations with stated claims of really ultimately a solidarity with communities? And Roberto and I have a really hard time really buying that line when this kind of financial alliance has been made with mining corporations, and quite frankly, ultimately a dependency. Are they going to say no or refuse that funding if they decide that these mining companies are perpetrating abuses? I don't have the answer for that, but I strongly suspect it would be very hard to say no to it once they've accepted it.
I guess as well, as you're talking about, you know, there is dissent in this, and you talked about, you know, there's another way to go about NGO, what the NGOs are doing. Like you said, you know, there's the two processes, but only the one side really seen the light of day.
Mm-hmm.
So has it just come down to perhaps better organization of the NGOs, or is it sort of changing, I guess the best way to describe it is, for more of the general Canadian sense, of kind of the Starbucks culture, where, you know, you buy in the same way that you give, which is not really thinking too much about what you're doing.
Well, I think what it comes down to really is politics. And what the Roundtable Initiative was trying to do was to really take this issue of abuses perpetrated by the Canadian extractive industry, take look at the roots of the situation and take on those abuses and say, look, we've given voluntary codes of conduct a try. In some instances, they work. In too many instances, they don't work. We need some kind of regulatory framework that will ensure that if these abuses are committed, that there will be legal consequences for it, as there are in Canada. But a Canadian mining company that works overseas is absolutely not regulated in any way whatsoever by Canada. What it does in Nigeria, Ghana, Peru, is strictly the business of that company and that country. And there is nothing that we as Canadians can do to regulate or rein in its activities. And that, to me, at root, if you really want to address these issues, that is one of the ways to do it, is by addressing the root causes and holding our corporate, quote-unquote, citizens to account. And I think the other thing that needs to be pointed out that we haven't really addressed here that I would really like to see the Canadian NGOs involved in, but many of them are very mute, is the whole issue of Canada's role in helping to rewrite mining codes around the world that make access to mineral wealth in these countries much, much easier and much, much more lucrative for our mining industry. To me, those are the issues that really go to the heart of development. If you're concerned about poverty alleviation, let's look at what the Canadian government has done with strong lobbying by the mining industry to water down mining codes around the world. To me, that's development, but that's political.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we'll have to leave it there, Gwen, but thank you very much for coming on it and talking about this, because, you know, it has sort of, like you pointed out before kind of the interview started, that this story has now kind of gone a little more mainstream, right?
Yes, it has. It was picked up yesterday by Samantha Nutt in the Globe and Mail, clearly inspired at least in part by our article. And once the Globe and Mail picked it up, then the CBC was all over it. It was the leading story yesterday on As It Happens, the leading story this morning on The Current. And this is great. And I see that it's generating the controversy that is truly deserved, and that there needs to be a national conversation about this. And so Roberto and I are really thrilled that more and more people are talking about this and are aware of the situation.
Yes. Now, I guess if listeners want to find out more maybe about what you do and what your work at CKUT, where can they do that?
Okay. Well, as you said, the name of the show is Amandla. It's a weekly African current affairs show that's been on air for 25 years now. And it's on every Wednesday night, Montreal time, between 7 and 8 p.m., and can be also, you can get it off the CKUT website at ckut.ca, so every Wednesday, 7 to 8 p.m.
Great, Gwen. Well, thank you very much for giving your time to do the interview.
Okay, my pleasure.